The following is a class on the Bhagavad Gita as it is. Chapter number 4, text number 4, given by His Grace, Sriman Sankarshan Das Adhikari, recorded on June 21st, 2010, in Nosori, Fiji.
So tonight we are reading Srimad Bhagavad Gita, chapter number 4, text number 4. Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya.
Arjuna uvacha, aparam bhavato janma, param janma vivashvataha, katam etad vijaniyam, tvamado praktavaniti. Arjuna uvacha, aparang bhavato janma, parang janma vivashvataha, katam etad vijaniyam, tamado praktavaniti. Translation and purport by Srila Prabhupada. Arjuna said, the sun god, Vivishvan, is senior by birth to you. How am I to understand that in the beginning you instructed the science to him? Report. Arjuna is an accepted devotee of the Lord, so how could he not believe Krishna's words? The fact is that Arjuna is not inquiring for himself, but for those who do not believe in the Supreme Personality of Godhead, or for the demons who do not like the idea that Krishna should be accepted as the Supreme Personality of Godhead. For them only Arjuna inquires on this point, as if he himself were not aware of the Personality of Godhead or Krishna. As it will be evident from the 10th chapter, Arjuna knew perfectly well that Krishna is the Supreme Personality of Godhead, the fountainhead of everything, and the last word in transcendence. Of course, Krishna also appeared as the son of Devaki on this earth. How Krishna remained the same Supreme Personality of Godhead, the eternal original person, is very difficult for an ordinary man to understand. Therefore, to clarify this point, Arjuna put this question before Krishna so that he himself could speak authoritatively. That Krishna is the supreme authority is accepted by the whole world, not only at present but from time immemorial, and the demons alone reject him. Anyway, since Krishna is the authority accepted by all, Arjuna put this question before him in order that Krishna would describe himself without being depicted by the demons, who were always trying to distort him in a way understandable to the demons and their followers. It is necessary that everyone, for his own interest, know the science of Krishna. Therefore, when Krishna himself speaks about himself, it is auspicious for all the worlds. To the demons, such explanations by Krishna himself may appear to be strange, because the demons always study Krishna from their own standpoint. But those who are devotees heartily welcome the statements of Krishna when they are spoken by Krishna himself. The devotees will always worship such authoritative statements of Krishna because they are always eager to know more and more about him. The atheists who consider Krishna as an ordinary man may in this way come to know that Krishna is superhuman, that he is Satchitananda Vigraha, the eternal form of bliss and knowledge, that he is transcendental and that he is above the domination of the modes of material nature and above the influence of time and space. A devotee of Krishna like Arjuna is undoubtedly above any misunderstanding of the transcendental position of Krishna. Arjuna's putting this question before the Lord is simply an attempt by the devotee to defy the atheistic attitude of persons who consider Krishna to be an ordinary human being, subject to the modes of material nature.
Vandeham Shri Guru Shri Jata Padakamala Shri Guru Vaishnavamscha Shri Rupa Sagrajata Sahagana Raghunathan Vita Sajiva Sadaita Zavaduta Parijana Saitam Krishna Chaitanya Deva Shri Radha Krishna Padan Sahagana Lalita Shri Vishakan Vitamscha.
So, why have I come here tonight? I have to answer that question. You cannot. I have come here tonight because I want to share with all of you the secret of how to become perfectly happy. Would you like to become perfectly happy? Yeah, very good. Yeah. This human life is not meant to suffer. But the reality is, we have to admit it, don't we? We're suffering. And we don't like it. That's the reality. So Krishna is so kind. He's our loving Father. He doesn't want to see that we're suffering in any way. So He's given this knowledge of Bhagavad Gita to relieve us from all suffering. You understand? But in order to become relieved from all suffering by hearing the Bhagavad Gita, you have to understand it how? Imperfectly or perfectly? Perfectly, that's right. You have to perfectly understand it. If your understanding of Bhagavad Gita is imperfect, then your application of it will be imperfect. And whatever happiness you derive from your following will be imperfect and incomplete. Therefore, we should hear from someone who perfectly understands the signs of Bhagavad Gita. And who understands it perfectly? Krishna. Krishna understands it perfectly. It's his science. He's the author of this science. He knows it perfectly. And one who purely represents Krishna also, you see. We can also hear from him. If we're not so fortunate to be Arjuna on the chariot, and we're separated by time and space from that chariot 5,000 years ago on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. keep the child in the lap, bounce, keep them happy in the lap so they don't run around. Keep the child happy in the lap, yeah. Very happy in the lap. Actually, if the child, if they're kept happy in the lap, they will then they will learn how to listen to the Gita and they will become advanced transcendentalists very quickly. The children learn much faster than we do. Their power of learning is much greater than our power of learning. So if we will teach the children to sit nicely in our laps and hear and let, help them to tune into the message that, my dear child, now you hear the Bhagavad Gita, you see. If we train the child like that, they'll become very, very advanced devotees at a very young age. They'll become little prahlads. Like these, this very good. These boys are all nicely trained. They're all sitting here in the very front, and they're very eager to hear. This is a very good example, these boys. Whoever their parents are, their parents deserve a round of applause. These boys are sitting here in the front. They're enthusiastic to hear. This is the way, you see. They'll become advanced devotees by this hearing process. It all begins with hearing, you see. It all begins with hearing. If one is eager to hear this message, now he's going away. Oh, the phone. Okay, good. He got rid of it. Very good. Smart boy. He got rid of that mobile phone. Very good. So, this hearing is so important. This is what saved Arjuna, you see. Arjuna was completely bewildered. He was a complete mess on the battlefield of Kurukshetra. He could not function as his occupational duty. Just imagine if you went to your office on Monday morning and you had a nervous breakdown and you couldn't function. And your boss came in and took one look at you and said, "What's going on with you?" And you say, "You know, I can't do this job anymore." And you just drop your keyboard on the floor and you start crying, you see. You wouldn't last long at that company, you see. You'd be in trouble, your job would be in jeopardy, you see. So just imagine Arjuna, here he is the greatest, most powerful warrior. Now it's, he's reporting for work, the start of his work day, and he's saying, "I can't handle this." He just drops his bow, and it's just, he's a complete mess. He's a complete basket case. So this Bhagavad Gita completely pulled Arjuna back together again. Not only did it enable him to excel in his job, in his occupational duty, which was just a side benefit of his Krishna consciousness, but it enabled him to become a completely pure devotee. Now the Mayavadis tell us that after liberation, you become God. That actually there's only one thing, impersonal Brahman. And when you become liberated, you merge into impersonal Brahman. But Arjuna became liberated. But we see the Bhagavad Gita, what is the final verse of Gita? You must be knowing it, Jayaman. Yatra Yogeshwara Krishna, Yatra Partha Dandaradadaha. What is that verse says? There is Krishna and there is Arjuna. Even at the conclusion of the Bhagavad Gita, after Arjuna became spiritually perfect, there's still Krishna, there's still Arjuna. You see? It's not at the end of the Bhagavad Gita that Arjuna just kind of went zhup and became Krishna. You see? And similarly in the Ramayana, when it was all said and done, did Hanuman become Ram? If we had said, "Okay, Hanuman, I have a special mantra I will give you, and this, you, by this mantra you can become Ram and you can enjoy Sita," what would Hanuman do? He would take his tail and he would knock you halfway between to India from here, you see, with his tail. He would give you a heavy whap with his tail if you dare to say such a thing to him, you see. And you can become Ram, you see. The Vaishnava, one of the six symptoms of pure devotional service given in the Nectar Devotion is the Vaishnava, even the conception of liberation, he hates that. That he derides even the conception of liberation. Well, to speak of hating liberation, impersonal liberation, even the conception of personal, impersonal liberation is he derides it. He can't stand that idea, you see. He doesn't want to hear such a thing, becoming God, you see. Why? Why does he not want to become God? Because if I become Krishna, you see, if we become Krishna, then can you love Krishna? Is it possible that you can love Krishna if you become Krishna? Prabhupada always said, love means to Krishna and you. You see. So this idea that you can merge and become God, it is repugnant to the Vaishnavas. Because the Vaishnavas, they want to love Krishna. Even there was a popular song, I don't want to live in a world without love. So if everything merges into one, there's no love. No love can exist in such a world. You see. Therefore, this idea of impersonal liberation, it's for less intelligent fools and rascals, actually. Less intelligent. It's so popular. So many swamis and yogis and gurus and rishis, yogis, they promote this idea. I remember when I was a spiritual seeker way back in 1960-something. Must have been around 1967-68, when Swami came to Austin. And he said, I'm God, you're God, we're all God. So this is a very common thing. One Swami, his disciples say, oh, our Guru Maharaj is very humble. You see, they take these two Vedic aphorisms, Tattvamasmi and Aham Brahmasmi. They interpret Aham Brahmasmi as I am God. And they interpret Tattvamasmi as you are God. So these disciples, they very proudly said, oh, our Guru Maharaj is so humble. He doesn't say Aham Brahmasmi, he says Tattvamasmi, you are God. You see? So actually this is simply a roundabout way. If I tell all of you that you are God, and I will teach you how to become God, I'm simply in a roundabout way claiming that I am God, isn't it? You are all God, but you have simply forgotten. And I will give you a secret mantra, and I will teach you how to become God, you see. So this is, it's not that he's some humble, great, pure devotee because he doesn't claim that he's God. No, he is claiming that he's God. By telling all of his disciples that you are God and you've forgotten it, and I will teach you how to become God once again, simply a roundabout way of claiming that I am God, you see. So whether they openly say I am God or they use some subtle trickery, roundabout way, it is all nonsense. The living entity never becomes God. If the living entity was God, how could he ever fall into this material existence? You know what they say? They say, yes, simply if I am God, but I've forgotten. Now let me ask you, what does Krishna say in the Bhagavad Gita 15:15? Sarvashyataham hridisannavishto mataksmatir jnanam apohanamcha, right? He says, I am the source of forgetfulness. So forgetfulness is an energy of Krishna. So how it is that I am God and I have forgotten that I am God? When forgetfulness, as confirmed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 15, text 15, is an energy of God. If forgetfulness is an energy of God, how the energy can overpower the source of the energy is not possible. Forgetfulness is subordinate to God. Therefore, it's not possible. You understand the logic? If forgetfulness is an energy of God, then how could God forget? Forgetting is part of God's creation. That means God is more powerful than forgetfulness. You understand the logic of this? God cannot be overcome by forgetfulness because forgetfulness is his subordinate energy. So this idea that I'm God but I've simply forgotten it is absolutely ridiculous. God can never forget. He is Sarvagya. He is the perfect knower of past, present, and future. He can never forget. It's completely insane to say that God, I am God but I forgot. So all of these philosophies that claim that the living entity, the jiva, is the supreme God, are simply bogus philosophies. They're simply bogus. It's confirmed in Bhagavad Gita chapter 2, text number 11. Natve vaham jatu nasam natvang neme janadipa nachayvanam avishyama sarvavayamataha padam. Never was there a time when I did not exist, nor you, nor all these kings, nor in the future shall any of us cease to be. So Krishna confirms the eternal individuality of the living beings. So, as I mentioned to you, I have come here tonight to make you happy, to teach you the formula of happiness. I have not come to tell you that you are God. And I haven't come to cheat you and tell you that you are God. And that's how you become happy, by, you know, realizing that you're God. No. Anyone who tells you you can be happy by realizing you are God is cheating you. They're cheating you, simply cheating you. But that person who tells you, as Krishna is telling, you see, that you're the eternal servant of God, and here's the way that you can become perfectly situated in that service, that person is your best friend, you see. Because Krishna is the best friend, and that person who gives the message of Krishna as it is, he's your best friend. So I have come tonight humbly on the order of Srila Prabhupada, as you're trying to be your best friend, by giving you this knowledge that you're the servants of Krishna and how to become perfect in that service. As I mentioned earlier, as long as my service is imperfect, then my happiness will also be imperfect. So realizing I'm Krishna's servant, that's step number one, okay? Step number two is becoming perfect in that service. That's step number two. So how does it become perfect in any science? Let's say you want to learn to play the tabla. What do? To become a perfect tabla player, you get a tabla teacher, you see? Tabla guru. When you want to become perfect in something, you get a teacher, a trainer, a spiritual master. In Krishna consciousness, you get a spiritual master. So, to become perfect in the science, as confirmed in the Mundaka Upanishad, tad-viganartam sugurum eva bhigatschet. If you want to actually learn that supernatural transcendental science, then you must approach a bona fide spiritual master. And what is his qualification? Shrotiyam brahmanishtam. Shrotiyam means who has heard the Vedic conclusion from the bona fide sampradaya. That is the meaning of shrotiyam. And brahmanishtam means he is fixed in Krishna consciousness. So if you want to actually become perfect in this science, then you must approach a spiritual master, take shelter of him by initiation, who is perfect in this science. And by this training you receive from the bona fide spiritual master, then you also become perfect. So when one becomes perfectly situated in Krishna consciousness, then he enjoys perfect happiness. And that happiness is beyond the modes of material nature. It is not a happiness based on the combination between the senses and the objects of the senses. See, in this material world, we have happiness, but we base it on the senses. If something is pleasing to my senses, I think I'm happy. Something displeases my senses, I think I'm unhappy. You understand these points? If something pleases my senses, oh, that looks good, that tastes good, that smells good, that feels good, therefore I'm happy. You see? We base our happiness on this false platform. Why is that a false platform? Because we're not the body. If I'm not the body, why should I base my happiness on the body? Does it make sense? You're not your body, right? Are you a boy? Yes or no? Are you a boy? Yes or no? The answer is no. My body is a boy's body. That you can think. But you're not a boy, you see. You're not a girl. These are simply the covering. It's like I'm wearing today a short sleeve kurta tomorrow, I can wear a long sleeve kurta. Am I a short sleeve kurta? No. Are you a short sleeve shirt? No, you're not. But today you're wearing a short sleeve shirt. So, right now you're wearing a boy's body. In a previous life you're wearing a girl's body. So you're not a boy, you're not a girl, you see. You're the spirit soul within. This is called Brahman realization. To understand that you are the spirit soul within that body. This is very important knowledge. The very first thing everyone must learn is, I am not this body. As long as you think I am this body, How far are you advancing Krishna consciousness? Do you have any idea how far you'll advance? As long as you think you're the body, I can tell you how far you're advanced. Nowhere. You won't go anywhere. In fact, there's a nice story given in this connection by our Param Guru, Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur. Once upon a time, there was a big wedding. Of course, in Indian culture, weddings are a very big thing, isn't it? A very big thing. Very big thing. In Western culture, not so much. But in Indian culture, it's a very big thing, wedding. So on this wedding, the boy and the girl from two different villages, that also used to be the custom, you see. They would always marry from different villages. But anyway, so all the villagers from one village, they're coming to the other village for the wedding. It was a long journey, and there was a big body of water. They had to cross a body of water and go for a long boat ride on the river or the lake, whatever it was, to come to the other village. So the villagers from the one village, they were running late to get to the wedding on time. They came to the water where the boatman was, and the boatman was just taking rest for the night. And they said, "Boatman, boatman, we have to get to this wedding tomorrow morning. It's so important. We'll be late for the wedding. We can't be late for the wedding. We have to get to the wedding on the other side of the body of water. So you wake up and you row us all night, and we'll pay you extra rupees. Give you a big extra tip of rupees if you'll row all night and take us to the wedding in the morning." So the boatman agreed, "Okay, if you give me this many more rupees, I agree to it, no problem." So the villagers got in the boat, they laid down to have a good sleep, you know, all night those boatmen are rowing, and the sun came up, and lo and behold, you know where they were? They hadn't gone anywhere. They were sitting in the same place where they had gotten on the boat. The villager says, "Boatman, what's going on here? We haven't gone anywhere." The boatman, "Oh my God, I forgot to pull in the anchor." I don't know what happened to that wedding. I don't know if it was called off or what happened to the wedding, but it was a pretty heavy mistake, you know. And so Bhakti Siddhanta Saraswati Thakur, he says this, what is the anchor? The anchor is I am the body. As long as you think I am male, I am female, I am New Zealander, I am Fiji, I am Indian, I am whatever, American, whatever you may think you are, as long as you think this way, then your anchor is stuck in the mud and you're not going anywhere spiritually. I don't care how much you chant, how much you offer food, I don't care how many offer your obeisances, I don't care what you do, as long as you think that you're that body, as long as you think you're an Indian boy, is it? You're going nowhere spiritually. So the first lesson is Aham Brahmasmi, I'm not this body, I'm spirit soul. That's the very first lesson. And once you realize that, you know, that I'm not American, I'm not Fijian, I'm not Indian, I'm not a Kiwi, I'm not this, I'm not that. As soon as you realize all these things, you see, then you can really begin to progress. When you chant your japa, when you offer obeisances, when you take darshan, when you take prasadam, when you hear the Gita, when you study the Bhagavatam, whatever you do in devotional service, if you kick loose of this ridiculous bodily conception which is basing your happiness on this combination of the senses with the object of the senses, then I tell you, wow, you are going to make a lot of advancement. You're going to be blissed out. You'll be blissed out every day. Every day you'll be in bliss, you see. You just got to remind yourself, hey, I'm not this body, you see. I'm not this 20-year-old body or 60-year-old body or whatever age. I'm not me. It's just a covering. It's just a garment. You see, it's just something I'm using right now in the service of Krishna. But it's, don't minimize the value of it, though. This human body is very rarely achieved. Do you know there are 8,400,000 species? Do you know all the species? You know that verse from the Vishnu Purana about the species? Anyone know that verse from the Vishnu Purana? We have any Bhakti Shastris here? Bhakti Shastris? No? No Bhakti Shastris. Okay, I'll give you the verse. Jaladana Valakshani Stavala Stavara Lakshavinshati Krimiya Rudya Sankhyaka Pakshinam dashalakshanam trinchalakshani pashavaha chaturlakshani manashaha. So what is the translation? Okay, jalaja means ja is birth, jala is water. So jalaja means those who are born in the water. And who's born in the water? Birds? Are birds born in the water? What about the beasts? Are they born in, who's born in the water? Fish, right? The fish, the aquatics are born in the water. And nava laksha, what does that mean? 9 lakhs. How much? In India, everyone knows what lakh is. In America, no one's heard of it. But in India, everyone knows a lakh is 100,000, right? So nava laksha, 900,000 species are jalaja, they're born in the water. So there's 900,000 types of fish or aquatic living entities, including jellyfish, swordfish, sharks, and whatever you got swimming around Fiji here. You see? 900,000 different species, okay? And what's the next on the list? Stavala, stavara. What does sta mean? That appears in many words now. Like in India, there's Rajasthan, you see? Or we say Hindustan, Pakistan. Stan means stay in one place. So what stays in one place? The dogs? Huh? The plants and the trees. They stay in one place. They're called stavara. So, jalaja navalakshani stavara lakshavinshati. What is that? 2 million? Yeah. 20 lakhs. Yeah, 20 lakhs. So there's 2 million types of plants and trees. 2 million. And then what's the next one on the list? Kramiya rudra sankhyaka. That's 1 million, that's 11 lakhs, or 1,100,000. And Kramiya Rudra, what is that? That's the insects and the reptile, you see. Like the ants. And in Texas, we have the armadillos. You ever seen an armadillo before? It looks kind of like a possum, but it has armor all over it. You call them armadillos. They're big, big in Texas. Very common thing in West Texas. So you have the reptiles and the insects. Krimiya rudra sankhyaka pakshinam dashalakshanam. Well, that's easy. That's 1 million. And what's that? That's the birds. And trinksha lakshani pashavaha. 3 million types of beasts. Four-legged creatures, you see. And what's the last one? What have we left out? Who is the last one we left out? Can you say? We've got the fish. We've got the plants and trees. We've got the worms and reptiles. And then we got the birds and the beasts. Now, what's left out? Who can say what's left out? Okay, Jai Rampabhu? That's right, the human beings. Chatur Lakshani Manashaha. The human beings, you see, the descendants of Manu. The human beings are there. And that's 400,000. So, just see how there's millions of species. Now, you say, where's all the 400,000 species? I mean, here we have maybe three or four. We got the Fijians is like one species, and the Indians, we got the Chinese, and the Americans. In Fiji, we see maybe four species. About four, you could say four species of types of humans here in Fiji that I've seen. The Orientals, the Westerners, the Indians, and the Fijians. So where's the other 400,000? Probably it's throughout the whole universe, you see. Just like there's living entities on Mars. There's Martian, there's moon beings, there's sun beings. The human beings actually throughout the whole universe. We don't see all 400,000 here, but throughout the whole universe, you got superhuman beings and Brahmaloka, Indraloka. You see, these are all within the category of the human beings. The superhumans are also human, considered within the 400,000 species. So we've got all these different species, but still the human life is very rare out of all these species. So to have a human body is a very unique thing. Because for millions of lifetimes, we've been dogs, we've been hogs, we've been armadillos, we've been grasshoppers and ants, and we've been even that grog plant, what's it called? Kava. We've been grog plants even. Can you imagine being a grog plant? We were grog plants in a previous lifetime. And we've been everything. Now we have the opportunity. Just imagine being a grog plant. What a kind of low-level tamasic life that would be to be a grog plant. Can you imagine being a grog plant? So, Beware, if you're a grog farmer and you're not Hare Krishna, you're not Krishna conscious, you might become a grog plant in your next life. So anyway, the point is that this is a very rare human, his human life is very, very rare indeed. So we should take full advantage of it. For what? Well, what is it, for most people, what does it mean to take full advantage of the human life? Well, get as much money as you can, get as much power as you can, and get as much prestige as you can. You see? They want money, they want power, and they want prestige. That's what they're after in the material world. But how long will that prestige stay with them? It's like, who is that famous person, that famous general in France? Who can say, who studied world history? Who is the famous general in France? Can anyone say? I'll give you a hint. Waterloo was his last battle. Who can say? Who was the famous general in... All right, I was trying to get somebody else. You know everything. Okay, Napoleon. He was a very famous general. Napoleon Bonaparte. He wanted to take over all of Europe. He took his French soldiers and he tried to conquer all of Europe. He was defeated and they put him into exile on some island in the Mediterranean. He snuck back from his exile. He got another army and again attacked. He's a very powerful general, but he was finally defeated in the Battle of Waterloo. That was it for him. So there's a big statue right now in Paris. It says, Napoleon is France and France is Napoleon. Prabhupada gives this example. Napoleon is France and France is Napoleon. But France is there, but where's Napoleon? You see, he had so much power, so much prestige, so much wealth, so much influence. He's one of the famous generals of history. In European history, everyone knows Napoleon. Very big general, you see. But where is he now? He's probably some rat running around the Eiffel Tower, you see. So nobody knows where he is anymore, you see. So all that power, all that prestige, all that wealth he gained by struggling hard in this material world, where did they get him? He became a rat. That's all. So don't struggle hard just to become some rat running around Nausari in your next life. You see what I'm saying? If you want to endeavor for something, why not endeavor for that purposeful end which is not obtainable by wandering all the way from Brahmaloka to Patalaloka? What is that purposeful end? To achieve the spiritual sky. To go back and live with Krishna as his eternal devotee and his pastimes in the spiritual world. Wouldn't you much rather be there than this material world? There you don't have any politics to worry about, of which party is going to rule the country. There's no exploitation. You don't have to worry about money. You don't have to worry about taxes. You don't have to worry about disease. You don't have to worry about old age. You don't have to worry about anything. It's a world completely free of anxieties. And that's your home. You are all actually from the spiritual world. You're not from Fiji. Your actual home is the spiritual sky. You're an eternal associate of God. So I have come as simply as the Prabhupada's humble servant simply to remind you of these teachings of Srila Prabhupada to help you. They're Krishna's teachings actually. Prabhupada has given them better than anyone has ever given them in the history of the world. Prabhupada is given the teachings of Krishna in a more powerful, more potent, more relevant way than any other teacher in the history of the world. Therefore, he's a very special spiritual master. So don't think that Prabhupada is simply another Gaudiya sannyasi. No. He is a special acharya who was empowered to deliver the entire material world from the cycle of birth and death. Those who take advantage of his teachings throughout the whole universe who become completely delivered from the cycle of breath in them. So anyway, I just wanted you all to really understand how to be happy and understand how to perfect your devotional service by taking shelter of a bona fide spiritual master and accepting his instructions as your life and soul. You see, we have a battle. When we take up Krishna consciousness, we're declaring war on Maya. Why is it stated like that? So how does Maya manifest? Maya is manifest in the form of your senses. Your senses are making so many demands. And Krishna and Guru, they're also making demands. So you have a choice. Whose demands are you going to give in to? Whose demands will you serve? Will I serve Guru and Krishna? Or will I serve my senses? You see? I can guarantee you, to whatever extent you think, well, I'll give, 60% to Guru and Krishna and 40% to my sins as well. That means you're going to be miserable, 40% miserable. So how happy do you want to be? Do you want to be 100% happy? I'm asking you. 100% happiness. Okay, very good. So therefore, give 100% of your allegiance to Guru and Krishna. That's the key. And you say, what about my senses then? How are they going to be happy? Your senses will automatically be satisfied. How is that? What does the name Govinda mean? He who gives pleasure to the senses. So if you will, under the guidance of the bona fide spiritual master and the sadhus and the scriptures, you will give all of your, you will please Govinda, you see, Radha Govinda. If you will give all of your energy to pleasing Radha and Govinda, then because Krishna Govinda is the pleaser of the senses, your senses will automatically be pleased. Don't we ordinarily do this in our ordinary life? When you water the tree, where do you water it? You have a tree in your yard? You have a tree in your house? Is there a house? Do you have a tree near your house? Tree? You don't know? You have a tree near your house? Do you live in a house? Okay. Do you have a tree near your house? Is there a tree there? One of those things that grows up with the branches? Is there a tree near your house? Yes or no? No? There's no tree? Okay. All right. I thought we were in Fiji. I didn't think we were in New York City. What's going on here? Actually, here you don't have to water the trees. You get so much rain anyway. But in Texas, where I'm from, I'm in central Texas. It's like halfway between the forest and the desert. It's kind of like pretty dry there a lot of the time. So we have to water the plants. We have the trees. We have to think about watering the trees sometimes, you see, so they don't dry up. So when we water the tree, do we take the hose and we water all the branches on the tree? No. We just put the water in the root. And then through the root, I know an example now. Let me ask you this. Do you eat? Do you eat? Yes or no? You eat, okay, good. Let's say if you don't eat, you probably wouldn't be alive. But you eat, that's very good. Now, does every part of your body need nutrition? Yes, okay. So when you eat, do you smear the sabji all over your body? You put it up, put some dal on your ear and put some rice up your nose, and take the halava and rub it all over your belly and. Is that how you get all your nutrition, or do you put it all in your mouth? When you eat, do you put it in your mouth or you smear it all over your body? What do? You put it in your mouth, don't you? Right, okay. So why do we put it? Our whole body needs nutrition. Why do we put it only in the mouth? Is there any reason? Because when you put it in the mouth, it goes to the belly, and the belly then distributes it through all the body, you see. So simply trying to feed the body by separately, feeding, a little chutney for my toe and a little, little achar for my elbow. No. You just put it all in the belly, through the mouth, and the whole body gets the nourishment. So Krishna is like the belly he's like the existential belly. When you give pleasure to Krishna, then automatically you become satisfied and the whole universe becomes satisfied. So this is why becoming Krishna conscious makes you unlimitedly happy, because when you become Krishna conscious, now you're actually giving happiness to every single living entity throughout the total existence. All of the heavenly planets, the lower planets, all the way over to Britain, everywhere, down to Johannesburg, everywhere you're giving happiness to all living entities. Just by giving pleasure to Krishna, you're pleasing everyone. They may not realize it, but actually they're getting the benefit of your service. That's of them. They may not realize it now. They may say, why are you chanting Hare Krishna? It's like when I became a devotee, my grandmother said, it's very nice that you want to be a preacher, but why don't you be a Christian preacher? She couldn't understand why I wasn't a Christian preacher, you see. The trouble is the Christians, you see, even though Christ was was a pure devotee, the Christians don't understand Christ. That's the problem. We just came by Jesus' Lord Harvest Center over here. It was a huge, huge auditorium. They must pack it full on Sunday morning, you see. And they have their Bibles, and they all go with their ties, and they walk around and shake hands with everybody. But, you know, they don't really understand the essence of pure bhakti. That's the difficulty. The modern-day Christians have lost the essence of pure bhakti. That's why they're killing the cows and eating their own mother, you see. If you're actually a lover of God, then how you can kill your own mother and eat her flesh? If you're a lover of God, you have to love God's creatures also. You see? So the cow is one of God's dearmost creatures. So how they can be a true Christian if they're eating meat? The Bible says, thou shalt not kill. And they're killing. They're brutally killing these animals. It says, thou shalt not murder. They're brutally murdering these animals in the slaughterhouse. What was that abbreviation we came up for KFC?
Karma.
Karma, full character. Anyway, they have KFC also, Kentucky Fried Chicken.
Yeah, karma, full cuisine.
Karma, full cuisine. Yeah. KFC means karma, full cuisine. Yeah, that's right. Come in here for some cuisine that's full of karma. We had a little cartoon in the newspaper that one of our members clipped out and gave to me. I still have that cartoon. It shows, it says, the reincarnation of Colonel Sanders. It says, this chicken is coming out of the egg and he's going, oh my God, how did I become a chicken? So the reincarnation of Colonel Sanders, you see. So, the thing is, Krishna consciousness is real religion. You see, this is actually reconnecting with God. So kindly take this Krishna consciousness process very seriously. Become serious about understanding what it means to please the spiritual master. Become serious about what it means to please Krishna. With all of your thoughts, all of your words, and all of your actions in all times, places, and circumstances. One time at the airport here in Nandi, somebody asked me, they said, are you a full-time devotee? And I was thinking, wait a minute, that doesn't sound right to me. I mean, somebody who's a householder, who's not living in the temple, they're not a full-time devotee? Because they work a job? In other words, they're a devotee when they come to the temple, and when they go to the office, they become a karmi? That doesn't make sense. If somebody's a devotee, that means they carry their Krishna consciousness wherever they go. When they go to work or they go to school, whatever they're doing, their Krishna consciousness goes with them. So if you're a devotee, that means you're a full-time devotee. Whether you're a brahmachari living in the ashram or a householder doing pujari work in the temple, or you're living on the outside, earning a living, making a job or running a business, being a devotee means you're a full-time devotee. It means you're always thinking of how to please Krishna. Yat karoshi, yat asnasi, yat jahosi, dadasi, yat tapashashi konteya, tat kudushva, mad arpanam. Just testing you. I like to give most of the verse and see who are the bhakti shastris in the audience. You see, you can fill in the last word, you know, and fill in the blank, you know. Whatever you do, whatever you eat, whatever you offer, give away, as well as austerities you may perform, do that, O son of Kunti, as an offering unto me. Very good. Another bhakti shastri back there. Very good. So, if you have a job, do it for Krishna. If you're going to school, do it for Krishna. If you're raising a family, do it for Krishna. If you just gotten married, make your marriage for Krishna. Whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna, and you'll become completely happy in that thing. You don't have to stop acting in this world. Take the actions like Arjuna did of his occupation as a warrior and use it for Krishna. Whatever you're doing, do it for Krishna, except a butcher. That you have to give him. If you're a butcher, you got to, you know, go down and work in the veggie market. You know, cut vegetables instead of cutting cows. You can still cut, but cut vegetables instead of cows. But practically any other occupation, you can keep your occupation. And do it for Krishna, you see. So anyway, I don't want to keep you all here too long. because I know everyone needs to get up early in the morning so they can sing Gravastikam prayers and chant their japa very nicely. In the early morning hours, Rama Maharta. Hopefully, all of you, many of you are doing that, if not all of you are doing that. It's not that we have to live in the temple to sing Gravastikam in the early morning. You can rise early before sunrise and sing Samsaradava Nalalita Loka, Samsaradava Nalalita Loka. It's a very nice way to begin the day. After your bath, sing the Gravastikam prayers, offer the Larti, and then chant japa very nicely before the day the sun comes up. And I guarantee you, you'll have a wonderful day. You'll be high-flying in the Hare Krishna mantra all day long. Be flying on the mantra Vimana, Hare Krishna mantra, all day long. If you have good japa in the morning before sunrise, you'll just be in bliss the whole day, whatever you're doing. Whether you're a taxi driver, or you're the prime minister, whatever you're doing, farmer, it doesn't matter. If you have good japa in the morning, you'll be in a state of bliss the whole day. Students also, you'll be the most blissful kid in your whole school. Get up early in the morning and chant some japa before you go to school, you see. It's very good. So anyway, are there any questions? Usually there's no questions in Fiji. Somebody surprised me and asked a question. All right, Jai Ram Prabhu. He knows I'm deaf, so he's going to come ask me in my ear.
In the lecture you said, first thing you have to know that you are not this body. Is that enough?
So, in the lecture I have emphasized how important it is to know that I'm not the body. The question is that enough? This is a very important question that he has asked, because the answer is indeed, no, that's not enough. Because the Mayavadis also say I'm not this body. To say I'm not the body, that's only half of the, that's half-end logic. We have to have the other side too. If I'm not the body, what am I? Of course, I've talked about it indirectly the whole lecture, but I haven't directly, explicitly stated what we are, so his question is very good. It helps to make my lecture complete. If I'm not the body, then what am I? Am I non-existent? No, I exist. I'm aware of my existence because I'm conscious that I'm a person, that I have feelings, I have a sense of identity, you see. So if I'm not the body, then what am I? Do you know what you are? If I asked you who you are, what would you say? Do you know who you are? Who are you? Would you give me your name? Well, in a court of law, I can change my name, you see. This is my father. He didn't like the name his parents gave me. He went to the court and he changed his name. You can change your name. So how are you the name? No, I'm not the name. What are you? If you're not the body and you're not your name, then what are you? Do you know? Tell me what he said.
Soul.
Spirit soul. Very good. That's very good. Here, take this garland. Come on. Very good. Here, no, let me put it on you. Yeah, very good. Very good. He knows that he's spirit soul. He's very trained. Very good. Very nicely trained by his parents. Very good. So, yeah. So, and what is the nature of the spirit soul in relationship with the Supreme Spirit Soul? To serve, you see. So we are the servants of Krishna. What is the proof? The part is always meant to serve the whole. Because obviously I'm not the complete whole, because I'm only aware of a little within this one body, you see. So there is a Supreme Spirit who is aware of everything throughout all of existence, and that is God or Krishna. So we're not the body, we're the spirit souls. And the nature of the spirit soul is to be an eternal servant of Krishna or God. So that's the answer. Does anyone else have some questions? You get a garland. I have some more garland. I get two more garlands here. Anybody who asks a question, they will get a garland. Special, this is called bribery. Anyone have a question? You have a question? You're an intelligent boy, aren't you? You're an intelligent boy? Huh? So you must have a question. What is it? You think, well, I'm asking him. What is your question? No, it's your turn. They will soon have questions because they're sitting close. That's very intelligent. These are all three very intelligent boys because they're sitting close. I know, so soon they will have good questions. Maybe not this lecture, but in the future, when someone gives lecture, they will have very intelligent questions. Because anyone who sits close like this, they will learn very nicely the philosophy. And they will soon develop very good questions, these boys. Maybe not tonight, but in the future, soon, they will be asking very good questions, these three boys here, especially. How about some of the boys in the back? You have any questions? That's good. He has tilak on. Very good boy. A very good boy back there with tilak. Very good. Thank you very much. Okay, well, I guess that's it. All the question well has run dry, and we thank you all very much for participating in this Nasari Center of ISKCON. Prabhupada is seeing all of you. It's not that Prabhupada is simply a photograph there. Prabhupada is personally present here in this temple. Narada and Krishna are personally present. Lord Chaitanya is personally present. Sita, Ram, Hanuman, Lakshman, they are all present here, and they are seeing how you're doing your seva here, how you're chanting, how you're worshipping, how you're honoring the prasad. So kindly continue in this way to make wonderful, wonderful glorification of Krishna here in this center of ISKCON, and I can assure you that your lives will become fully successful. Thank you very much. Gantaraj Srimad Bhagavatam Ki Jai, Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.
This is for these three boys,
okay. Very good. Actually, I'm going to give you a garland also. You get garland? Here's your book. You already have your garland. Now you come and I'll give you the big garland.
Another one.
Huh?
One more.
Oh, I have one more. Okay, well, come on. That boy with the tilak, he can come get the garland. Yeah. I very much appreciate you wearing tilak tonight, so here, you take this garland. Put your head here. Yeah, good. Okay, very good. All these children appreciate it very much. These are the future leaders of our movement, so we have to train them how to become pure devotees, you see. I'm very appreciative. He had a question. So we train these children how to become very exemplary devotees. And how do you do that? By forcing them? No, the parents have to become examples. You become ideal, pure devotee examples for these kids, and I guarantee you they'll become prahlads. All of them become great prahlads. Okay? Jai Srila Prabhupada Ki Jai.